Okay, on our calendar is 96-529, Florence DePalma versus Charles DePalma. Mr. Recupero.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. This certainly is a case that we need to start with the case, Your Honors. This is a child support case. The facts of the case, the parties in this case were never married. They did have a child. They lived together for a number of years. And after separating in 1988, the father took the son with him, and the mother stayed in close contact with the father and the son. There was a period of time, a two-year period of time between 88 and 90, where there were no orders from court. In 1990, there was an agreed judgment entry put on by the Stark County Domestic Relations or Juvenile Court, wherein the father was given custody of the son, Michael, and there was no support order contained in the 1990 order. Things went on between these parties, visitation with mom taking the child and buying him things and doing things with him, father primarily taking care of support of the child, and that continued until 1993 when there was a problem with some visitation issues. And at that time, we filed a motion to change the visitation and actually change the custody. There was a counter motion made for modification in support. That issue was agreed upon by another agreed judgment entry in 1994, whereby there was a more expanded version of visitation in the case. And once again, the prior order of 1990 was basically incorporated into the 1994 order with regard to the support and non-payment of support issue.
Counselor, we've read the briefs and we understand that factual and a procedural matter. I'd like to go right to the law. Whatever happened to the law that the child support is due the child, not the parent?
Well, I think that is the law, Your Honor.
Okay, so even if the father here waived it, could he waive it on behalf of the child?
Well, I don't believe that an actual waiving of the child support is what's taking place. There was not a specific support order, Your Honor, that was put into place. That did not prevent the father or anyone else from coming back and getting support.
But the statute requires that a trial court not only determine the termination of the marriage, support, but all custody, but also support.
Okay, if that's when the trial court is going to enter an order of its own. In this case, there was an agreement between the parties, and that's where we're making a distinction, and that's where this Anderton versus Lansdale and the various cases that have followed Anderton versus Lansdale come into place.
For the father, the support essentially was left with the father. The non-custodial parent was not required to support.
The non-custodial parent, Your Honor, was not required to
pay
physically
support.
Pay support.
Correct. But support is established in that agreement. It's the dad. He's going to take care of the son. He's going to be the custodial parent without any assistance from mom, monetary required. That's where the child's going to get support.
That is the allocation of the support, but
right.
It was not a child support order.
I know your argument about
okay.
That.
So what we're urging the court to take into consideration is the dual threshold test that was followed in Anderton and has been followed by other courts in the 12th District Court of Appeals and in the 3rd District Court of Appeals. Actually, when I took this case to trial, my facts mirrored the facts in these cases such as Anderton. I fully expected to win this case because I felt that the statute did not have a provision in there that said the court, or that if the parties agree, the court cannot take their agreement with regard to child support. So the facts in this case mirror the Anderton-Lansdale decision. What this court has to decide is if it's going to follow the Anderton-Lansdale decision, which I think
Why do you say that, counsel? Isn't the issue presented here whether or not a dissolution that does not impose order on a non-turf doesn't require support. I guess that's not even an issue. If you don't apply the guidelines, is that agreement thereby determined to be unenforceable? Isn't that the issue that we have, that one, no agreement is viable that does not follow the guidelines?
Well, I am opposite of that statement, Your Honor. I believe that by following it, and there is a way for the custodial parent to come and get support if the circumstances have changed pursuant to that case.
But it's not your position that circumstances have changed, or is it?
No, my argument is that in this case, they had not changed.
So why do we even get to Anakin from your standpoint?
Because there was no support order.
And do you think that there needed to be a support order?
Well, I think that the parties should be able to enter into an arrangement between themselves with regard to support. The underlying, and this is something that I've read in all of this court's cases, and I think it is what has to be taken into consideration, and that is an utmost consideration. What is in the best interest of the child? And I think as in a custody situation, you know, from a custody standpoint, mom and dad can come to the court with an agreed judgment entry concerning custody, which I think is as vital an issue as support, and agree as to which parent is going to have custody without any intervention at that point from the trial court. And I think that the parents in the best interest of the child is served by letting the parents come to an agreement and be silent with regard to support, because obviously they have a grasp of what the financial responsibility is.
That's a very good policy argument, but the problem I'm having is I don't see it in the statute. 3113.215 makes it so clear that the General Assembly has decided, and I don't understand, frankly, why there's not some reference here to mediation or to agreements that are reached by parents, but as you know, the statute, I don't find it in the statute, and unfortunately, we have a statute that seems to be quite rigid, that says this will be the way in which courts will determine child support, unless, and then there's the condition for the judge to decide something different, but you make a very good policy argument. It's very persuasive to me, except when I look at the statute, aren't we bound by the statute?
Well, obviously, Your Honor, we're bound by the statute, and in fact, in the Mark versus Grimm case, this court took into consideration how we must be bound by the statute and the technicalities of the statute. And basically, that's one of the provisions of my argument, because 3113.215A6 defines what a child support order is. And it says, a child support order means an order for the payment of child support. When you use that definition and you look at 3113.215B1, which is the statute that's being used in this situation, in any action in which a child support order is issued or modified under this chapter or any of these other chapters. So that the defining language there is when a child support order is issued or modified. There never was a child support order issued in this case.
That's you agree with that, and I think that's the problem. Is that it seems to me in 1994, whenever it was, that was the first opportunity for the court to order a child support order pursuant to 3113.215, wasn't it? I mean, aren't we starting there with the so-called child support order that allocates the responsibilities among the parents?
The first opportunity in this case would have been in 1990.
Well, it could, right, the court could have done it then, but the court apparently chose to just take we've got two parties who agree, why not take that agreement? I mean, that's the whole problem with, to me, the statute doesn't acknowledge that parties may agree to these things. When we're urging them to do that, we've got mediators and courts urging them to do this, and yet the statute is out of sync with it. Am I wrong, or am I missing something?
I don't know, Your Honor, because I kind of feel the opposite. I feel that by the statute not specifically addressing that issue, and by reading what the definition of a child support order is, that it can be inferred, even though it isn't specifically stated, that these parties can agree.
But except that as you go to B1, as you know, the child support order refers to the amount of child support that would be payable under a child support order is calculated pursuant, so forth, that all the language refers to amounts being calculated and then putting in this child, placed in this child support order. The definition of child support order is so sort of generic that I don't know that that really helps us in deciding what it is the order actually looks like when it's entered.
I understand, Your Honor, but then I still go back to the first sentence where the B1 says, in any action in which a child support order is issued, that did not happen in this case, and that's what makes this case a little different.
You're drawing a distinction then between cases that go to the court, reported intervention that results in a court full order, versus dissolution and agreements between parties that come to the court and simply present their image to the court.
That's exactly.
If we adopt a strict interpretation, and it seems to concern Justice Moyer, then aren't we saying that every single dissolution now requires some more intervention, the court filling out the sheet, the court figuring out the formula that we have now imposed upon trial courts an enormous additional burden to intervene in every single dissolution case? Is that the end effect of what this interpretation could be?
Well, Your Honor, I think that's actually what is happening in some cases, in some courts at this time, that they are requiring, because obviously the court does have that ability to, it's going to grant this order to the document, it should investigate, and I agree with that. But in this case, it didn't investigate. So I don't think that it poses any more of a burden than what is already there. The problem is that some courts are doing it and some courts aren't. And that's one of the biggest problems in the practice of domestic relations. Stark County courts require. I also practice in Summit County, and Summit County has waivers. I have taken cases in recent in Summit County whereby one party has what they've agreed on the judgment entry that there will be no support and custody goes to one party and there may not even be visitation. And those courts have approved those orders.
Do the courts in those instances, do they order an amount of custody that the support that the custodial parent is obligated to provide the child or not? Are they like this one where it just says you'll be responsible?
There was no support order.
What you're really doing by those entries, just to play the devil's advocate for a moment, is conferring jurisdiction on a court it doesn't have. The statute requires that at the time of the dissolution, that the best interest of the child, as you put it, that is what the statute says, there's got to be a dissolution, there has to be a separation agreement approved by both parties, and has to take into consideration the support of the child as well as the either one of the spouses. Now, if a trial court just says, okay, I'm signing the lawyer, the entry the lawyers bring in, and I know what you're talking about because we used to do it all the time. You get an agreed entry and the judge just signs it. But maybe the judge shouldn't be doing that. And am I straining to read B1 when I say there was a child support entry here? It happened when they finally went to the referee, albeit long down the road, there is a support order pending.
And that's exactly what the other argument is. I guess at that point I go back to what Anderkin says, and that is that we're not trying to abrogate these rights. They are there, but there should be a change in the situation. One of the things that I think I would like to bring to your attention.
Okay, before you do that, I just have one other short question. Was there any arrearage determined?
In this case, no.
Okay, so the entry, just the referee's recommendation, the trial court's approval, the Court of Appeals affirming, simply says child support shall be paid by the appellant from now on in an amount determined by the guidelines.
One of the issues there was when is it going to start, and it had to do with some of the delays in this case, but essentially,
yeah, that's always an issue, whether it's the time the motion is filed or whether it's time whenever the court makes the entry, but that can be resolved.
One other issue I just would like to touch on. With regard to the cases, as we go through this list of cases that follow Anderson, one of the patterns that you see in these cases are situations where predominantly is a mother giving up custody of her children to the father saying, I will support the children, and then turning around and within a year's period of time, with no change in financial situations, coming back and saying, well, now that I've been able to get the strong policy argument in favor of following the Anderson case, because that weeds out the potential public misuse.
That's a great argument. Just didn't happen here. It was exactly the opposite. Didn't she move for a change of custody? And then he countered with a support motion?
And then they agreed.
So your argument didn't occur in this case, did it? It was exactly the opposite.
Would you want to speak to the Children's Service Agency issue here, how the father winds up being represented by the agrees and then, but the intervener gets to take his case anyway, his argument anyway?
Yeah, I would like to address that.
You did in the brief, and I just thought you might want to elaborate.
Everything was in agreement while when he was having to pay for a counsel, and now all of a sudden when he's got, free legal counsel prosecuting his case for him, he decides that he wants to go forward with this, and that was one of the other problems I had with this case. But what Your Honor's getting to is how did they get involved? They got involved because apparently in 92 and 93 yeah. they received some ADC for 1 month period.
Well, I wondered, their efforts here seem to be a bit gratuitous, and I wondered if it was there some concern of theirs that this child was not being properly supported? I mean, they obviously wanted the mother to help support.
Actually, this was transferred from Carroll County to Stark County for them to try to get the money back that ADC had paid. Right?
Oh.
And that was one of the other arguments that I felt that I had, was that there is a remedy for the Department of Human Services to get their money back when they pay money out in a support situation, and that was their proper remedy, not bringing this motion for support. But
okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cupero. Ms. Hopwood.
Good morning. My name is Kim Hopwood. I'm one of the staff attorneys for the Stark County Child Support Enforcement Agency. Justice Douglas, you stated my position, so I'm going to repeat what you said and then sit down quickly. It is our position of the state of Ohio that parents cannot give away the right of support of their children. Mr. DePaulo, the appellee, did when he started receiving public assistance, and he's received it in the years of 1992, 1993, 1996. We came in and told him what to do. And what we told him to do was that we're going to ask that you order a request for mom pay support, and we're going to pursue that action.
This was because he had, during those periods, he had some medical problems, I take it, and he wasn't able to continue to provide the support that he agreed to provide. Is that essentially?
That is correct.
And so
job layoffs also.
The agency came in and, on behalf of the child, to.
Yes. The state of Ohio's position is that this is a model case from the time the magistrate initially heard it until the appellate court heard it. When the magistrate heard it, he bent over backwards trying to do the support in many different ways, because I think he initially, after hearing Attorney Recupero's arguments, agreed with Attorney Recupero. First, he said, he looked to what you said in the in-rate dissolution of marriage of Blazer, parents can't give away the rights of their children. Secondly, he looked at the date of Blazer, which was 1990. April of 1990, they looked at when these parties entered into a parent.
Counsel, I want to explore that. Can't give away the right to support. What, is that argument a matter of degree? Because if dad wasn't laid off and didn't fall into ill health, then arguably dad was providing support. Is your argument, let's say that never happened, now is the argument that a non-custodial parent, mom in this case, must, and dad must pursue whatever he can get from the non-custodial parent, because the child is entitled to as much money as possible? Or is it threshold of support, if the child is being supported by whichever parent,
no,
then there's no obligation to pursue further support from another parent.
It is the position of the state of Ohio that Ohio Revised Code 3113.215 dictates that parties must exchange wage information, that the Ohio support guidelines may be calculated, but they want on
that. But that statute, I'm wondering what you think about it. We're using the words of that statute, and the statute says it applies in some instances, but the one that might fit you is a proceeding where court, where the court determines the amount of child support. Now, is it your, is, I mean, you got to fit in that statute somehow,
right?
Because there was no child support order, or is it that there was zero ordered? I mean, which is it? Was there a child support order in effect here?
No.
Okay.
Not
so then, is this, is a dissolution a proceeding where the court determines the amount of child support or not?
When we filed this complaint to establish an order of support, it is our position at that point they established an order of support, and prior to that, zero.
And yet, there was a final judgment
yes.
in this divorce. I mean, these parties dissolved their marriage, and there was a final judgment.
Yes.
And that final judgment was not appealed.
Correct.
And having not appealed that judgment, how can a person and your client now raise the specter that there was error in that original dissolution in that the court failed to follow failed to impose the guidelines of 3115, 21, 5, B, whatever. I mean, this is a final judgment for which there was no appeal taken.
But the final judgment was created improperly, according to Marker versus Grimm.
But what's that mean? Don't you have to appeal that? I mean, how's that different?
And well, how's it different that when we brought this, the state intervened and we were bringing this complaint to production of support. So after we brought it before the courts, then we cried foul, hate of honor, this original agreement that wasn't done properly. And I'm not
a third party can overcome the finality of judgment by saying, well, we weren't a part there?
Yes.
And what legal theory supports that?
5107.04, which dictates the state has the ability to collect any money that they have paid out.
Now, that's something wholly different than the agreement between the parties.
I agree totally.
Sure. That is a whole other proceeding.
Yes, it is.
That allows the state to, or in this case, to seek repayment.
I agree with you.
From whatever source. But I gather it wouldn't include the non-custodial parent because there's a final judgment
I agree with you that there was a final judgment between the parties where they established paternity. It is our position that they did it improperly. So when the state forced Mr. DePalma to establish an order of support, and believe me, we forced Mr. DePalma to establish an order of support, then we said, Your Honor, this wasn't done properly in the beginning. They
void what are you saying? There's a
yes.
void judgment?
Yes, but we didn't go back for back support. We just said, let's start over. Let's go from here and go forward. Because even though the party set practice, now Mr. DePalma will argue at this point that he didn't really enter into an agreement, he just followed along. And that is also our argument. That they discussed visitation, there's a one liner concerning support, but they never really talked about support.
Well, counsel, I think what Justice Cook is asking, I'm certainly interested in that too. Is it your position that for whatever good reason, let's assume good reasons, and I'm not looking to some bad reasons, parties might decide, I'm going to have the kids, I have the economic wherewithal to provide well for them. Maybe I feel guilty about what I've done to the other parties, so no support. Is it your position that they cannot ever agree to that the guidelines have to come into play even when there's no dispute that the children are, by reason of this mutual agreement between parties outside the guidelines, the children are going to be adequately cared for?
No, that is not my position. It is our position that they must exchange wage information, that they must calculate the house support guidelines, that they must create a judgment entry which sets down in its findings of fact and conclusions of law why it is unfair and unjust and not in the best interest of the child to receive support. So I strongly believe the parents can enter into this agreement, but there has to be a discussion about money, there has to be a discussion, and they have to talk to the court. Court of Baldwin, and the courts have to give a blessing in the findings of fact and conclusions of law.
So if they said, we've discussed it, we know what each other makes, and for our own very private reasons, this is what we want to do, that covers it? People do have enormous feelings of guilt many times when they break up a marriage. And those may get into the mix of what they do in property and what they do in child support and all those kind of things. And they may not want to discuss, and the law doesn't require that you lay out in the courthouse files all the things that have gone wrong in that marriage.
I don't think you have to discuss everything that's gone wrong in that marriage. I think there's a duty of the state, or to the state, when it comes to speaking to their children, that they have to say why they're deviating from the Apostle IV guidelines. So I would disagree with your statement in that respect. In this instance, the appellee, Mr. DePaulo, tells me...
Well, I can think of some...
Yes.
Reasons people are...
Let's let Justice Piper finish.
Set forward this, you know, they're embarrassing, they feel guilty about it, all of those things. Why should they have to tell the judge all of that if the two of them arrive at an agreement and the children are adequately... I understand that you... judge would have an interest in looking into this, because I can also think of the opposite. Somebody just needed a little cash, and the other side said, here, I'll give you some cash in return for an agreement never to seek any more, which is a bad purpose.
In family court, we do have to err on dirty laundry. And when we're speaking of children, if we're talking about two adults entering a divorce, property settlement, I would say we do not. But whenever it comes to speaking to the rights of children, because what happened here is...
Well, isn't it sufficient that the inquiry be directed to the ability of the person waving this off to, in fact, properly care for the children?
As long as it's in the judgment entry.
Couldn't the parties arrive at the same end as the parties here wanted to, after having a hearing and determining that the court ordered the wife or the mother to pay $300 a month, or couldn't, and they journalized that, and everything's over with. Couldn't the father say, listen, Alice, I don't need the $300 a month, forget about it? Could he refuse the payment of the money from the mother, or is the mother absolutely bound to pay that?
No, he could refuse the money if a court order reflected it was not in the best interest of the child. And I frequently see when they say it would not facilitate visitation, and that is for the usual station.
So the parties could not agree after it's determined mother pays $300 a month.
I would agree.
And they leave the courthouse and they go home, and next week he calls and says, listen, Alice, you can't afford that $300. I don't need it. Forget about paying it. They can't get together with that.
No.
They have to go back to court and say, Judge, I really don't need the money. She really can't afford to pay that much. And in the best interest of the child, would you put an order on saying that she no longer has to pay that amount? Is that what they have to do?
Yes.
And that's never going to be in the best interest of the child. That's why that statute is so interestingly written. All he has to do is take the $300 and give it back.
Yes.
And then you've completed what the statute requires.
Yes.
I think maybe we've talked about it, but I want to get express your view of this. If the parties go through mediation that some courts have for these issues and agree, that I take it that certainly can be considered under would be unjust or inappropriate, would not be in the best interest of the child. That is, that the calculation, the statutory calculation, the judge could override that by looking at this mediated agreement and decide that's really better for the child than the statutory. Is that correct? Have you seen that happen?
Yes. You were
I'm reassured. Thank you.
As long as put in the judgment entry, we think that's fabulous. We urge this court not to adopt the Anderson versus Lansdale thinking, but to follow the direction of the Fifth District Court of Appeals. Anderson versus Lansdale, what scares me about that case is it only cites the case that I always pronounce it Bhagat, B-A-H-G-A-T. Bhagat was a 1982 case. That's pre-guidelines. The guidelines were passed in October 1987. While we can have not become the law of the state of Ohio. We want people to have the opportunity to enter into agreements, but we feel there's a very strong duty for this court, the Fifth District Court of Appeals, and the trial court, which felt strong that we must protect the rights of our children, and that's what I'm coming to this court today. Are there no additional questions?
Thank you, Ms. Hopwood. Mr. Cooper, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds if you'd like.
We won't ask you to enter into an agreement. I think Ms. Hopwood makes it perfectly clear that they had to twist Mr. DePalma's arm to get him into the courtroom to do this because he felt that he could take sole responsibility for caring for the child. And as a result of the arm twisting that went on in this case and the fact that CSEA would not permit us to create any other order than what the court ordered in this case, now there's been a total breakdown in the relationship between the mother and the son. And that's exactly what shouldn't be happening in these cases.
Mr. DePalma argued to the court that it really was in the best interest of the child here that he continued to support the child 100%. Was that opportunity not available?
It was not presented.
Well, but was it available?
They intervened to take that argument away from him. I mean, it's a funny situation because in one breath they're saying they represent this man, and in the next breath they're representing him differently than what he wants to be represented. And in the meantime, the 16-year-old son, who up to that point had, had a wonderful relationship with both parents, now gets in the middle of this strife, and the relationship is destroyed. And that's unfortunate, and that's not in the best interest of the child. And that's why I think that there's...
Probably not also in the record.
Well, those are things that have gone on since the case.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.